Our theme this month is brokenness. And brokenness, you know, is more than just a few mismade stitches. This reading, a longer one than usual, is an excerpt from the beginning of Margaret Regan's account of the death of a 14-year-old girl, Rosaline Hernandez. Regan is a reporter with the Tucson Weekly, and she pieced together this story of the El Salvadoran girl's death from interviews with many people associated with the case. It is a tragic story, but emblematic of many others, going on even as we speak along the U.S.-Mexican border. Steve?
Jocelyn shivered as she stepped over the stones and ducked under mesquites. She was in Arizona, land of heat and sun, but on this late January day in 2008, it was cold and damp. The temperature was in the 50s, and the night before it had dropped to near freezing. A winter rain had fallen, making the trail even more treacherous. Jocelyn was 7 miles north of the Mexican border in prime Sonoran Desert. It was a wonderland of cactus and mesquite, beautiful but dangerous. At 14, she had an important responsibility. It was her job to bring her little brother, age 10, safely to their mother in Los Angeles. The children had never been away from home before, and already they'd been traveling for weeks. Now they were almost there, just days away from their mother's embrace. The family hadn't been together in a long time. Back home in El Salvador, the kids lived with relatives, and in the years their mom was gone, Jocelyn had become a little mother to her brother. Finally, their mother had worked long enough to save up the money to send for the children. She had arranged for Jocelyn and her brother to come north with adults they knew from home, people she trusted. But here in the borderlands, they were in the hands of a professional. Like thousands of other undocumented migrants pouring into Arizona, their group had contracted with a coyote, a smuggler paid to spirit them over the international line. So far, everything had gone according to plan. They had slipped over the border from Mexico, 20 miles away, and had spent a couple days picking their way through this strange desert, where spiky cacti clawed at the skin and the rocky trail blistered their feet. The coyote insisted on a fast pace. They still had a hike of 20 miles ahead of them, out to Interstate 19, where their ride would meet them and take them deep into the United States. Jocelyn pulled her two jackets closer in the cold. She was wearing everything she had brought with her from home. Underneath the jackets, she had on a tank top better suited to Arizona's searing summers than its chilly winters, and she'd pulled a pair of sweatpants over her jeans. Her clothes betrayed her girly tastes. Her sneakers were a wild bright green, a totally cool pair of shoes that were turning out to be not even close to adequate for the difficult path she was walking. Best of all were her sweats, with the word Hollywood emblazoned on the rear. Jocelyn planned to have them on when she arrived in the land of movie stars. She tried to pay attention to the twists and turns in the footpath, to obey the guide, to keep up with the group. But by the time they got to Cedar Canyon, she was lagging. She was beginning to feel sick. She'd been on the road for weeks and out in the open for days, sleeping on the damp ground. Maybe she'd skimped on drinking water, giving what little she had to her brother. Maybe she'd swallowed some of the slimy green water that pools in the cow ponds dotting this ranch country. Whatever the reason, Jocelyn started vomiting. She crouched down and emptied her belly, then lay back on the ground. Resting didn't help. She was too weak to stand, let alone hike this roller coaster trail out to the road. It was a problem. The group was on a strict schedule. They had a ride to catch, and the longer they lingered, the more likely they'd be caught. The coyote had a decision to make, and this is the one he made. He would leave the young girl behind. He told her not to worry. The Border Patrol would find her soon, and they would take care of her. Her brother cried and begged to stay with her. But Jocelyn was his big sister, and Jocelyn insisted that he go. As he recounted later, she told him, "You have to keep going and get to Mom." The other travelers grabbed the boy and walked on, leaving Jocelyn alone in the cold and dark. She had only her clothes to keep her warm. On her first night alone, the temperature dropped below freezing to 29 degrees. By the weekend, when her brother arrived safely in Los Angeles and sounded the alarm, it had warmed up to 37.
Our second reading this morning is from a fabulous address by the Reverend Victoria Safford of our tradition, titled, "How Does Our Faith Hold Brokenness?" which was recently republished in Quest, the newsletter of our church for the larger fellowship. Safford writes, "On those occasions when the weight of the world is closing in, and the evidence against hope mounts as I read the news, when I start confusing cynicism with pragmatism, and I sigh, I'm so tired, I'm so discouraged, my husband Ross will say, in the kindest way, what kind of entitled grandiosity of privilege is this? To think that you or I or anyone has the right to sever the bright thread of hope, the tradition of dedication to the common good, and faith in people's power to imagine great change and great risks, and then to take them? We have a beautiful, proud history of work for human rights and freedom. We're only here to pass it on," he'd say. "All you have to do is keep the fire burning for a little while and pass it on. You have no right to put it out." Not in so many words, but that's about what Ross would say. Nathan, that selection is perfect. And a good balm against the snow outside, I have to say. Fourteen years old. Who were you? And what were you doing at 14? When I was 14, I never would have dreamed of anyone wearing sweatpants with the word Hollywood printed on the rear. But in some ways, my dreams were not all that far from Jocelyn's. The movie Star Wars had come out not long before, and I was still dreaming, which I still am in some ways, of becoming a Jedi Knight like Luke Skywalker. And my experience in the wild was when my family took a trip to learn canoeing on the Eagle River in northern Wisconsin. When a bald eagle, a real live in the wild bald eagle, the first I had ever seen outside of a zoo, soared over the river we were paddling down, I named the majestic bird Obi-Wan Kenobi. Very proud of that. But my family's time in the wild was nothing like what Jocelyn would face a few years ago. We were equipped, safety was primary, and there was always a backup plan. Jocelyn had none of those. It is no rush to judgment along any political lines to say that Jocelyn shouldn't have been out there where she was, where she died. But out there she was, like so many others before her and so many others since. The truth is that people will go to any length possible to provide for their families. In my time with you this morning, I want to bring Jocelyn's story to you as an example, among countless others, of the brokenness that is part of our world today, and ask what this may mean for us. We can't fix everything. Have you noticed that we don't even talk about compassion fatigue anymore? It was all the rage and then went away somewhere in the 80s or early 90s. It's all we can do just to keep our job or jobs and keep the kids fed. What we're experiencing now isn't so much compassion fatigue as what it means to live in a culture in which fatigue is now the norm. And still, we are called to address what is in our power to change and to do what we can. As you may remember, or perhaps not, it has been the practice of our denomination to gather once a year, each year in a different city, for what we call our General Assembly. Columbus was one of several cities that had been looked at to host the General Assembly, or GA, that will meet towards the end of June this year. Instead, our denomination's planning group chose Phoenix, Arizona. And just so you know, the conversations have started, and Columbus is again among a number of cities that is vying to host General Assembly either in 2016 or 18. Deborah, do I have that right?
I'm not
going to bet. All right. She's on the planning committee this year. But Phoenix was chosen for this year. And that was before Arizona State Bill 1070, SB 1070, the Arizona law that required their police to detain folks who looked like they might be undocumented immigrants, the so-called illegals. As soon as we heard of SB 1070, we saw a train wreck heading our way. See, it's not only this congregation that's sensitive to the number of peoples of color in our midst. We have been making strides, real progress, toward becoming congregations that work toward a more culturally pluralistic future, both in our congregations and in society at large. We're training white folks like me to be better allies in the cause of dismantling practices that keep power and privilege the property of only certain folks who too often look a little bit too much like me. And we've been aware for some time that we need to make General Assembly more accessible to folks across a wider spectrum of those who take part in what we do. And what would happen as we anticipated coming together in Phoenix this June if those of us of color faced on their way to Phoenix the very real possibility of being stopped and detained on the way, their way, to our annual meeting? They were risking arrest. So the cries went out, boycott GA 2012. No, we just need to change the venue. Can we get our deposit back? That $500,000 deposit? All of this took place in the months leading up to the annual meeting almost 2 years ago, the GA in Minneapolis. And we were anticipating a very lively gathering there, like something we had not anticipated or expected or experienced for a very long time. But our folks in Arizona did something really smart. They asked the migrant rights groups there, folks who served literally in the trenches, what they thought we should do. And you know what they said? Instead of saying boycott, stay away, they said come. Come and listen. Come and witness. Come and bring the power of your attention. And make sure you invite the national press along too. So that's what we're doing this June. This year, our General Assembly will be different from any other. Justice GA, it's being called. And that's why Jolinda Stevens and I, along with many parents of our youth, have been working to get a team of youth together that we'll be taking to Phoenix to witness, to learn, and to be part of our denomination's probably premier caucus, the Youth Caucus. And that's why we have been and will continue to ask you to help us raise funds to get everyone there. When Jolinda and I met with the youth early this church year to ask them what they most wanted to do and what their next justice trip might look like, they considered several opportunities and then chose Justice GA as their project. This was their choice. They want to be part of something important. Let me repeat that. Our youth want to be part of something important. I've been asked this last several months, several times, by several people here and elsewhere in the denomination, why are we primarily white, overeducated folks taking up the issue of immigration? We don't know very much about immigration. It seems for many of us like this is a faraway concern that has nothing to do with Central Ohio. Don't we have more pressing concerns closer to home? Well, yes, but no. First of all, we may think of immigration as something that doesn't affect us here in Central Columbus. But if we think that, we'd be wrong. And I'm not only talking about our large Somali population here. Our local Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, I-C-E, what used to be called the INS, keeps itself very active, deporting undocumented migrants out of the Port of Columbus, often breaking up families in the process. Whoever is in charge of the local ICE office is looking to make a reputation for themselves. They are being tireless, and the dispatch is not covering this in any capacity like, at least I think it should. And furthermore, this is an increasingly large concern for all of us, who consider ourselves citizens of this still great nation. As of 2 years ago, over 600 miles of our border with Mexico has become, it's called fenced off. It's called a border fence. In most places, it's a wall between 14 and 21 feet high. But it's a fence. We've militarized much of our border with Mexico at a tremendous cost. The government accounting office in Washington calculates the border fence cost an average of $3.9 million per mile. That's nearly $2.5 billion. That kind of money can buy you a stealth bomber with change left over or a whole lot of schools. We paid for it, you and I. I know that immigration is complex, and there will be people here on either side of the political spectrum. That's fine. I know people of intelligence and heart will disagree on what our national policies should be. I also know that migration has been part of the human story for as long as there has been a human story. If a village had outgrown the lands around it that were able to support it, people had to try their luck someplace new. As a woman told Margaret Regan when she was interviewing folks for her book on Joceline, how far would you walk to feed your children? How far would you walk to feed your children? Before we pass judgment on anyone crossing the border, I think that's a fair question to ask. But it's not the only one. Others might include why we are targeting undocumented workers of low-paying jobs rather than on the firms that routinely, systematically hire them, which raises a whole larger issue about the role of low-wage workers in our economy. Also, we might ask what can be done to help prevent people from leaving their homes in the first place, in Mexico, in El Salvador, wherever they come from. Regan gives an example of a village coffee cooperative in Mexico that's been instrumental in keeping the families there working and at home. People from that village who had emigrated to the U.S. have actually come back to work for the coffee co-op back home. That's what fair trade is all about. That's why we serve fair trade coffee, which is really good. What's also good is that what we're doing to educate ourselves here at First UU. Jolinda's been teaching a class on immigration issues, and this Friday night, we're hosting one of our denomination's leaders in dismantling racism, Paula Cole Jones. There is a flyer about that in your program. Paula is wonderful. I met her when I first came to Columbus. She was our guest at the first local UU ministers retreat I went to. It was the first time I had been to a UU-sanctioned anti-racism, anti-oppression training that I thought, now this is worth listening to. The others had all been shame-based, and I came away feeling not good, and not like I wanted to get involved. Paula has a whole different approach. Come on Friday. You will not be disappointed. She's going to be engaging with us in an exploration of history by listening to immigrant voices. I don't have all the issues. I do not have a position paper for you on what our nation's immigration policies should be. But what I do know are three things. The first is, in the words of sociologist Robert Bella, that democracy begins with paying attention. I never met Joceline. None of us here did. But she's still worthy of our notice. Of course, you don't have to look to the far reaches of the Sonoran Desert to find her. She and others much like her are everywhere. Here in Columbus, within blocks of this congregation. The second thing I know is that even the highest strongest walls will erode over time. When I was in South Africa 9 years ago, I had never seen so much barbed and razor wire in my life. And along a well-traveled road that stretched north of Johannesburg into the much more wealthy suburbs, there was a stretch of whitewashed wall topped with razor wire. Below the wire in one section, someone had spray-painted the words you'll find at the top of your program today. Those famous ones from Robert Frost's poem, Mending Wall. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. Whoever said that graffiti wasn't literate? And the third thing I know is that all of us have migration stories to tell. And the ones that don't involve a helping hand most often end in tragedy. As far as my family can tell, Louis Meter, who brought our name into this country, established himself here in the U.S. only being after helped by a farmer from Illinois. From what we've worked out, and this is sketchy, the family ran the village mill in a small village not far from Strasbourg, France. When the communists took over the local council in the 1850s, the family was worried that the economic balance in the town was going to shift. They had been up here, and they were thinking the farmers were going to end up here, and the mill may not have enough food to provide for everyone in the family. And so Louis was sent to the New World. Soon after he arrived here, though, he was given a rifle and told to fight for the Union. After his fighting days were done in our Civil War, which must have completely perplexed him, he couldn't have known the issues involved. And this we don't know the how or the whys of. The farmer set him up on some land of his and allowed Louis to make a name for himself and start a family of his own. I wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for that farmer's generosity. So, three things. Democracy begins with paying attention. Walls will erode over time. And most of us are here because of a helping hand along the way. That immigration is also an issue of faith. And here, I have to pause. You see, I like to believe that it is in our places of imperfection that we find the gateway to our greatest humanity. Or in the words of songwriter Leonard Cohen, that there are cracks in everything, and that's how the light gets in. But as I've been reading about Joceline and about those who are staunchly in favor of the border wall along the U.S.-Mexican line, the cracks threaten to overwhelm. Sometimes they become all I can see. It's hard to see any good coming out of any of this. Folks on the border feel threatened, so they build a wall, which does not deter those coming north. In fact, the only time that the emigration to the U.S. slowed from south of the border was when our economy had its downturn. What the wall does is make it more difficult for folks to pass, more dangerous. Hasn't stopped anyone. I'm left asking what good is getting through all the cracks in the current state of immigration in our nation. Maybe one good thing coming out of all this is that our youth are taking an interest and are using this as a way of learning to see their lives as part of a much larger context. Let them be models for us all in that regard. Hopefully, our presence in Phoenix this June will help the conversation on comprehensive immigration reform move a little bit closer to the front burner. Ironically, perhaps, the more I've been reading and thinking about the subject, the more I can't shake former President Ronald Reagan's words. In the back of my head, I hear him sounding when he was at the Brandenburg Gate in 1987, admonishing, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." I'd like us still to listen, but that's me. I think Reagan knew something we'd be wise to remember. And that's not something I often say about his presidency. You don't have to agree, but that's just where I am. The more we try to fix something so that we'll stay the way we want it to be, the more likely it's going to just slip through our fingers. And I think of Jocelyn with the word Hollywood on the rear of her sweatpants, displaying a youthful dream of a future she longed to be a part of there with her mother in Los Angeles. We all had our youthful dreams, dreams that held our ideals as we navigated our world, our way in a world we wondered if there would ever be a place for us. Jocelyn had a mother and a family and friends who loved her. Tragically, that was not enough in her case. What can be done to protect what needs to be protected? What can be done to protect who needs to be protected in this world? Well, that's what we're going to Phoenix to help us answer. I hope you'll consider coming along as well. Thank you.